Hello, everyone. Welcome back to I See What You're Saying, the Disciplined Listening Podcast. I'm Michael Reddington, and today it is my pleasure to welcome our next guest, Dale Gilmore. Dale is the principal and chief financial strategist at Quest Advisory, where he and his team empower business leaders to make the best decisions as they are transitioning their businesses. And while they provide many different services, they focus primarily on succession planning and selling both family and privately owned businesses. One of the things that I like the most about what Dale and everybody over at Quest Advisory does is they donate 10% of all the revenue they earn from their work to the Make an Impact Foundation to help benefit underprivileged children. So not only do they talk a lot about aligning values and doing business with values, but they put their money where their mouth is, literally, with how are they consistently supporting underprivileged children. So as we get into this conversation, I'm really excited to share Dale's approach to these often very sensitive and difficult conversations. And there's a lot of parallels between conversations we have to have both in our business and our family lives as well. So he'll talk about the importance of meeting people where they are, but he also is going to share his approaches to how he deals with people's egos, which I found to be very valuable and fascinating. He's going to share how he navigates family disputes and misunderstandings and how they relate to business decisions. And he's also going to talk about interview techniques that he uses. And you might not think of succession planning and selling businesses along with interviewing, but he really goes a long way to interview not just the people involved in the business, but their family members as well, to learn as much as he can about the people and the processes. And he's going to share his techniques for doing so. So I'm really excited to share this conversation with everybody. And thank you so much for being here for another week. We truly appreciate it. You know our sponsors, Humantel. Head over to humantel.com. Enter the code INQUASIVE25 for 25% off of their best-in-class online training to learn how to identify when people's emotions are shifting by accurately evaluating changes in their facial expressions and nonverbal communication. For the professional interviewers, head over to certifiedinterviewer.com. So you can learn everything you need to know about joining, learning from, and contributing to the International Association of Interviewers. It's also where you can get all your questions answered about the Certified Forensic Interviewer designation. And while you're online, please head over to inquasive.com to learn more about the programs that our clients ask us to facilitate and customize for their senior leaders, sales teams, and HR teams, so we can teach them how to obtain the everyday confessions hiding in all of our conversations. Thank you so much for being here for another week. We really appreciate it. So now, without further ado, I introduce to you Dale Gilmore. Good morning, Dale. It's so great to see you again. It's been way too long. How are you this morning?
I'm great. Good to see you, Mike.
I really appreciate you carving the time out, especially with everything that you have going on. And I'm really excited to dive into this conversation because, as we spoke recently, you've got a few new things going on that we can sort of tie into this conversation as well. But I feel like you have a very unique perspective on the work that you do with family businesses and business owners and the merger and acquisition and succession planning world. And even beyond that, you have nonprofits that you're involved with as well. But that really gives an interesting view into not only the dynamic of business conversations, but the dynamic of family conversations, where they intersect, and lessons that we can all apply in our workplace lives and in our family lives. And of course, what you do is so purpose-driven, it's worth highlighting that right away as well. So I think the question I would love to ask to open this thing up is, how do you work with business owners who may know, may not know, or may fool themselves into think they know what it is? How do you help business owners identify what their true quest is as you begin working with them?
Yeah, so, typically for us, the very first thing we're trying to do is figure out, from their own viewpoint, what is their quest? And sometimes they don't always know the answer to that. So we try to meet our business owners where they're at. What have they defined on their own? A lot of our family-owned businesses don't particularly pursue, individual wealth planners because in their minds, they think that they can, turn a wrench for another 30 cents better than investing for 5 cents with somebody else, right? So those are our clients typically. It doesn't mean that they don't have a 401k or they don't have a wealth planner, but they're more focused on their business and their family. So sometimes I try to figure out like where do they see this thing going? Is this a family transition and I'm going to keep the business and it's going to live in the family forever? Try to meet them where they're at and figure out what we have or don't have. And that's, you know, we typically call that our explore package at work, but really that what's your quest definition is a lot of questions and it's not financial. Like, even though we do a lot of work around the finance, it's really more about like, why are we doing this? What's your purpose? What's your love? How tied to the business are you? Is your identity the business or not? You know, and then do you have family in the business or not? You know, and really start there. And then we always try to begin with the end in mind. And so we use basically that owner's net worth statement with maybe a business valuation that we might do for the business as our kind of table of contents to say, this is where we're at for our measurement, right? But then we always say, look, like, you know, are you going to live to be 100 years old? And how many kids do we have? And how many grandkids do we have? And, you know, is there a charitable, you know, intent for yourself? And, you know, what's the dollar amount got to be for someone to live the rest of their life in a comfortable way and also leave behind what they really want to leave behind, whether that's a legacy? Some people don't like the word legacy, but is there some dollar amount or an amount that you want to leave behind? And try to get our brains wrapped around the future of where this is going. And then it's really then becomes a, here's where we are, here's where we're going, this piece in the middle, how's our business serve that? And there's like three levels to that. Like, one is just to, for the owner to live his life, right? That's one level. The other level is this a generational wealth building business, or is it just a valuable business and we just want to give some residual to the kids? Like, are we building a generational wealth platform, or are we just going to retire these assets and whatever your heirs get, you get? You know, is there a purpose beyond your personal life or not? That's a big question. And if you I can't lead with that question, right? Yeah. Sometimes we don't know what we got, but we start by where are they? What would they say in their own words? And then we ask our team and our advisors and other people around, we want their opinion. Like, what do you think the quest is? And ideally that will give us an indication of whether they've done some strategic work or not. Or they might say, hey, I just know that he really cares about, you know, his gross margin being, you know, 42% and it's 40. And then, so that's, you know, are we narrow in the weeds or are we thinking them broadly? So we're trying to meet our clients where they're at and expand their thinking to where they're going to be, and really try to do that through their purpose, whatever their purpose is. We're really trying to uncover that purpose. Like, why are we doing this at all? I love my mom. I love my wife. I love my family. I love my kids. I love my employees, you know, and I really just want to care for them all. Or it's like, you know, I was really just good at turning wrenches and I just kept turning wrenches until I now have this business and I'm not really sure. And my, you know, so we're trying to evolve that. And can we get there to meet where they're at so that then we can expand the thinking and create the space for, you know, generational wealth. And if they don't want generational wealth, that's okay. It's more, let's try to figure out if that's the plan or not. And then we can drive to the beginning with the end in mind. If it's generational wealth, I now have to think beyond the owner into their next generation and maybe the generation after to say, what's, and do I have two things, right? I have the business and then I have the family's holdings. And the family's holdings might be its own business, right? And so that's kind of the uncovering piece that we've got to do early on with a new client.
And you left us so many threads to pull there. And a couple of things I want to call out really quick, meeting people where they are. I know a lot of people talk about doing that, but that is so important to do. I feel like especially when somebody comes in with a rational perspective, an outside perspective, a process to follow, all too often they can fall into the temptation of diving into that process, that rational process. But often meeting people where they're at involves satisfying their current emotional condition. Because if we don't satisfy their current emotional condition, there's no way in hell we're getting to the rational process. So meeting people where they're at to start with, and sometimes that means being patient and allowing for extra conversation and time and all those things to go by, is so very important. So I wanted to shout that out. And the other thing I wanted to shout out as well was when you talked about not asking certain questions right away. Like, all too often people have the big question they want to ask. Maybe it is, what's your purpose? Maybe it is, have you thought about your family? But if we often we have to lead to our most important question, not lead with it. And if we don't have the trust, if we don't have the rapport, if we haven't addressed their emotional state, asking what we believe to be that big, important question up front can grenade this whole thing. So showing the awareness right away to meet people where they're at, and then really make sure you're asking questions in that strategic order and you're not opening up with what could be a game ender are two very important call outs. You mentioned something too that I feel like permeates the business owner world from, and you have much more experience in this than I do, but even with the folks that I've worked with and met, sometimes people have a very difficult time separating their personal identity from the business. Mm-hmm. So whether they admit it or not, because I've got a sneaking suspicion, more often people don't admit it when it's true than do admit it when it's true. But when you do realize that somebody essentially has no differentiation between their personal identity and their business identity, their business is their identity, how do you start to work with them in order to help reframe the situation, paint a new picture for them? Because I imagine we've got to separate those identities a little bit in order to really get working forward on creating the solutions that they bring you in for.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm an accountant by background sometimes, and so I tend to put things in buckets. So that's what accountants are good at, right? So when I realize that somebody has aligned their identity with their business, I have to think a couple different ways, right? I mean, I try to do everything with open white space, even though accountants are typically black and white. But to me, it's like, if I've realized that, I've got to figure out what are my resources, what's available to the owner to do something about that or not. And, you know, and you got to think about that person's happiness too, right? Like, and happiness and joy and purpose and all of the things. If that business is something that clearly is going to be multi-generational wealth building, maybe I can take that identity and I can shift it into the family, you know, legacy, possibly, right? Like, could I help that person go ahead and just keep the identity where it's at and then focus more on the family legacy and building family wealth and allowing others to kind of sit in the right seats and the right, you know, on the bus to get all of this stuff where it's going. That's actually a beautiful fortunate situation, I would say, that's available sometimes. I mean, because then it's, you got more to work with. Because the reality is if somebody were going to sell their business and they don't know what they're going to do on Monday, that's where seller's remorse comes from. It is not always the math, right? Most of the time it's the joy or what do I do now? Maybe they think they're going to play golf forever and then, you know, play golf for two straight months and they're like, yeah, this is it, my forever. So to me, the other thing is like, how do you keep their mind focused on their purpose and their best gifts and the highest, best use of them as human beings? And a lot of people, when they sell their business, if they don't know what they're going to do on Monday, that's when health declines and other things, their brain's not being used the way it was before. And, you know, somewhere there's a nice place for that. So I'm looking for what's next. And if the what's next is not a whole lot different, except for shifting mine out of the business and into the family multi-generational wealth, that potentially could be a nice gift to have. If it's not there, like meaning, it's a good business. It's got value, but then there's things that, you know, this is probably sell it and disperse assets to my family when I pass. If that becomes that, then you have to be a little more creative. You know, when we sell a business in our business, when we sell a business, we put 10% of the revenue associated with the transaction in a charity called the Make an Impact Foundation. Mm-hmm. And for us, that's a little bit of a bridge to help them figure, gives them something to do on Monday to say, hey, what kind of kids projects do you want to serve with this money? Hopefully we light up another, you know, angle. But to me, there's, you know, we try to dig in to say, what are all the things you want to do? Make a list. make a list of everything you've never done that you've always wanted to do, but just didn't have time because you were in the business. So we really try to work really hard to say, to get somebody's mind in that other place so that they don't lose the joy and they have a new purpose. But that isn't, it's not a light switch. And that requires a lot of work and effort on both parties and a lot of faith. So it's not always it's not always a perfect match. Maybe they are really good at some part of the business that the business will always need, and they're comfortable not to get involved in all the rest of it and just do that one thing until, you know, and wind their time down and go from a 40-hour week or maybe 80-hour a week to a 60-hour week to a 40-hour week to a 20-hour week to a, you know, I'm serving my five best friends who are still clients, and I'm going to hang out with them and having lunch with them, and that's the rest of my life. Or, you know, just trying to figure out what's the rest of your life look like in a way that's comfortable for the owner and their family too. I mean, there may be grandkids things, or maybe there's just this new area of life they want to explore. You got to find it, and it's got to be purpose driven. And you got to care for that. It can't just be transactions when you go to sell these companies.
Well, and that statement is clearly identified with the Make an Impact Foundation and putting 10% to that. And I'm a sucker for any programs that are taking care of kids and helping build the future. So, you know, you got my attention there right out of the gate. But also, I love how you're intentionally using that as a stepping stone. So maybe somebody knows what they're going to do next. Maybe they're not. But to your point, on Monday morning, we just put all this money over here. We got to do something with it. So lead the way. So that's a great example. I also love how you recognize that sometimes the way to do it isn't to force it. So if somebody's identity is tied to the business, but it's fortunate, it's multi-generational, we can use that. So it's almost like I was talking to my son this morning with the famous Bruce Lee quote, be water, that'll work, we'll go that way. There's no need to force something different. We don't have to be married to a process that clearly won't work. But I also loved how you mentioned it's not a light switch. All too often when we're looking at persuading somebody or changing somebody's mind or leading them to a new perspective, we want to do it now because, damn it, I already see it this way and I can't believe you don't. And the longer it takes, the more impatient I get. And the more impatient I get, the more we're missing opportunities. So hurry up and see it my way. So just seeing or having the patience to step back and realize it's not a light switch. We need to help them understand their purpose. And just the thought of using their happiness, like what makes them happy? Let's have more of that. It's all little things that might sound like they kind of fall through the cracks of a conversation, but very, very important to highlight to your approach that not only apply with what you're talking about with business owners, but really apply if we're looking to influence or change somebody's mind in a complex, layered situation in many contexts. Earlier, you talked a little bit about the family aspect of it. Maybe the kids want to be involved in the future. Maybe they don't. Maybe the business would substantiate that. Maybe they don't. I would imagine, I guess here's kind of an everyday analogy. If I have a bad day at work and I go home and tell my wife about it, my wife is getting my side of the story.
Yeah.
And I might try hard to be unbiased about it, but that's going to be impossible. She's getting my side of the story. And then my wife, like most spouses, is going to support me first. And then maybe as the conversation goes on, try to turn me on to other perspectives in the situation. But first and foremost, she's going to support me in my perspective. That's how our inner circles work. So I imagine that if somebody is going and talking to their business about their family, either it's one-sided for the most part. Maybe it's very positive, or maybe it's doom and gloom. I guess it could kind of go either way. But I'm very curious, when you start cracking open the cans to talk with other family members to get their perspective and their information, maybe delicate's the wrong word. How do you strategically go through those conversations to help unearth the truth while not upsetting the family dynamic?
Yeah, so sometimes you have your own gut feel as an advisor when you walk into a situation, and you're not always right, but sometimes you have this underlying feeling after you meet some of the other family members. And sometimes, you know, the leader of the business has a way that they've already kind of pre-decided, and they may be very narrow in their thinking with regard to how their family is going to serve in the business and how that's going to happen. So I've been through a couple scenarios where both businesses that just continue to, you know, exist with family in it, and other scenarios where, you know, somebody ultimately was looking to sell their business, or they thought their kids were going to take over the business. And there's a couple things going on there, right? Like sometimes there's age things. Sometimes the leader of the business is in their 70s and 80s, and the succession is the person that's already in their 60s, right? Like, and then you're like, well, wait a second. Do I have a succession to this succession to consider, right? And sometimes those folks that are in their 60s have sort of, maybe they're really good at part of the business and served really well, but it might not be presidential time for them, you know, to run that company, right? And so you have to interview at people to find out what they like and what they want and who they are, and not, and try to separate the family from the family, if you will. You know, what is it about that individual person and their skills and, you know, and what do they want? What do they really want? And I've been through a situation where, you know, a client had, you know, three daughters who had two son-in-laws in the business, and the daughters were kind of in the business or had been in the business here and there. And it was just assumed that his daughters would take over and own the business. And I really thought that that was going to be a bad idea and in my gut. And so it took a while, right? I mean, this wasn't like it wasn't a light switch. After several years of serving, I finally said, look, you know, why don't we interview, you know, your family just to make sure that everybody's aligned on where you're headed with this, because, you know, I want to make sure that I see how that structure happens and how you kind of move people into different parts of the business so that sales keeps selling, marketing keeps marketing, and operations keeps executing. And, you know, so we went through that whole process, and we learned very quickly that the daughters didn't want anything to do with the business, and their husbands that were in the business, they didn't want their husbands like their dad. You know, they didn't want their husbands, you know, to be so tied to the business that they weren't available for their kids and their kids' things. And, you know, because that was their memory of the situation, right? So, you know, you quit, but none of them wanted to share that with dad. They didn't want to let dad down. They didn't want to hurt dad's feelings, right? And so you learn a lot by having these separate interviews with people and really learning about what they want, what they care about with regard to the business. And they always care about their family members. That's never the issue. There are always some, you know, trepidation or blind spots, I would say, that are family blind spots that maybe everybody knows, but maybe dad or the leader of the business or, right? And they just, it's just been easier to kind of operate that way over the years, and they get in that little spot. And, you know, to me, it's no matter what we do when we're providing this advice and listening, our goal is to make Thanksgiving, right? I mean, not have it be about the business, right? And that's really a tough thing when we have people in the business. It's tough for the family. It's tough for everybody. But once you kind of uncover that, bringing it to light becomes a little easier if you live in it as an advisor. You know, bringing it to light is, hey, I'm a key teammate to this, and here's what I'm hearing, and here's what I feel like isn't going to be a good answer for you unless you, you know, maybe look at people outside the family to potentially run this business or whatever. And then you go through all the iterations of what's possible. And then the owner still potentially will make his own decision. And you kind of put it back in his lap. But if you organize all the assets and all the lanes that are possible, and you pick the pros and cons, you go through the pros and cons game of all the seven different ways to transition a business, the owner will eventually make a choice. And even if he doesn't make a choice, if you do that work when there's an emergency, you at least have some lane. But you'd rather have in an emergency something that's going to sustain the business, even in an emergency. So some of the work is, hey, I need you to bolster this thing up, because if something does happen to you, I don't know what's going to happen with sales, or I don't know what's going to happen, whatever the owner's the best at, right? But that family stuff is, you know, and sometimes you may have somebody that's capable. It's like, you know, you often have this. It's like, I have a 17-year-old son that is going to go to college, and I think he could run this business. I mean, that's always the hurry up and wait. Right. And, you know, it's not too, I'm not saying the 17-year-old knows what he wants to be when he grows up, but it isn't too early to ask some simple questions of the 17-year-old, right? It isn't too early to ask some of these questions, start to pave the way. A lot of our you know, I would say best practices are to send the young people off to do internships with other business owners, you know, businesses and other skilled areas, you know, have them work for somebody else and be honest and learn, like, what's the work ethic of my son? He's super smart kid, but he's not working all that hard. Well, that's good information. You know, you have to avoid this nepotism, you know, trap that is out there. You have to kind of put out the lanes. If you're going to have somebody work in the business, make sure that there's a role and responsibility that's clear that you would hire elsewhere for, and make sure that they apply to that role. And if you're taking a chance on them, you know, that might be all right, but don't shift your standards for what you would expect somebody to serve that role, and try to separate business and family. And that's not an easy thing to do. Sometimes you have a family member reporting to a non-family member. You got to support the non-family member to do their job so that it doesn't feel like a trap for that non-family member. So there's a lot of noise there, but opportunity exists if people are paying attention.
That paying attention part is key. And not only paying attention, but like you said, in so many words, removing the individual from the business, removing the family from the business, so to speak, and trying to look at it as objectively possible. Because, to steal a phrase which I love for you, let's make Thanksgiving Thanksgiving, and let's not make Thanksgiving the business conversation. My ears perked up, not surprisingly, as soon as you started using the word interviewing. Interviewing people, gathering as much objective information, hopefully truth, as you can, identifying patterns, where does information overlap, where do perspectives change, how does this impact the decision we're making? I'd love to dive into that with you a little bit more, but I've got another question first. When you run into situations, and it doesn't have to just be the example you gave, certainly there's details that I don't want to ask for all kinds of reasons. But when you find yourself in a situation where a business owner is convinced that the kids are going to take over, and then the conversation with the kids is, actually, no, we're not interested in that whatsoever. How do you then take that message and bring it to the business owner in a way, because they need to know, that hopefully helps them begin to realign their expectations of the business while also respecting the sanctity of Thanksgiving dinner?
So I'm always looking for common ground. And common ground is, you look for the lowest level or the highest level or the, you know, lowest common denominator, so to speak, right? So me, I'm looking for common ground. So common ground could be, you know, I interviewed your daughters, and what I realize is that they are so excited about you spending time with your grandkids, right? That might be the door I walk through. I look for the common ground where everybody would agree. What's everybody, and it could be math, it could be something about the business, but ideally it's an emotional thing. Where can I find the common ground of emotional connection?
That's awesome. That is from a perspective standpoint, from a reframing a conversation standpoint, instead of walking in and saying, you know, I just had a conversation with your daughters, and I got to tell you, they've got no interest in buying into your business or running your business because they don't want their husbands to have a relationship with their kids like you had with them. Like, that conversation is going nowhere fast. It's going to go backwards. But to walk in and say, you know, I had a conversation with your daughter, and the things they're most excited about is you having the opportunity to spend time with your grandkids. A, it's true. B, go ahead and say, well, I don't want to spend time with my grandkids. Like, even if for some strange reason that was true, no one's ever going to say that. So yeah. Now you've reframed it around a positive, mutually accepted, common ground emotional outcome. And damn, that was awesome too. It's good if it's math, but it's better if it's emotional. Like, if there's a common emotional ground to stand on, that's such a great position. Now you can use that to work backwards towards, well, with the grandkids being the focus and family time being the focus. Sounds like, and I'm making some assumptions here, but sounds like your daughters really want to be more family focused and less business focused. So while we're focusing on the family, let's take some shifts and start looking at who might be able to step in and take over the business. And now doing it that way, focused on the family instead of what people don't want, man, that was spectacular. So when you do sit down to interview family members, I'm curious as to I have lots of curiosities around this, but specifically for now, I'm curious as to how you frame those interviews. Like, you use the word purpose a lot. What's the purpose of the conversation to get their initial buy-in? And then what are some of the questions or approaches that you found to be most valuable for getting family members to open up and tell you the truth about the situation?
So, the easiest thing to do is say, obviously we're here for a reason. You know, dad's starting to think about, you know, options with the business. And, you know, I try to be as transparent about the basic facts.
Yeah.
And try to treat the business like it's its own person and entity. So to try to take personal emotions the best you can out of the, like, state mm-hmm. facts. Here are my facts.
Sure.
While we're here today is I wanted to just figure out, you know, how do you see this? You know, it's really important. Your input's really important to dad. You know, how do you see this? You know, what's important to you? You know, is it possible if we keep the business, and what would your role be? If we sell the business, how do you feel about that? And give them the ability to invite them to be part of the solution, and try to avoid the interactive things specific to how their relationship exists. The other thing I listen for as we communicate is, you know, the labeling kind of things, always and nevers, and, like, you know, the stereotypes that have evolved over time, where dad always this, or, you know, my brother always this, or whatever. And I don't want to completely ignore that, because obviously it lives and breathes and is part of the dynamic of the family. But I try to lean into it, and I try to challenge subtly without shutting people down. Like, can you give me a recent example of that so I can understand better? And a lot of times that can be a mental shift as well, because we get to a place where maybe I get a recent example, but that it might not be the best example, because it's been years of the same kind of patterns that they went ahead and called it a thing and labeled it, right? And the peeling that back sometimes gives me also new openings of, like, well, you know, things have changed. You know, dad is 75 or whatever, and he is thinking this way, and that may be different than the pattern of whatever that you just described. And, you know, trying to create an idea that something could be different, which allows people to shift their thinking. And that's, you know, I'm not trying to completely brainwash them or anything, but I'm trying to connect dots to what's real and what's actionable that we can take as a next step. But listening to the family function, and, you know, this isn't just family, right? It could be the president, and, you know, sales and operations oftentimes don't, you know, work together in companies, right? The sales guys, like, man, I sold all this stuff and they screwed it up. The operations guys, like, well, you sold all the wrong stuff. We don't even do that, you know? And so that, you know, as you think of the common characteristics of business, it's the same with family. Like, where's the stereotypes? Where are the labels? How can you deconstruct those and recreate processes that serve the greater good?
Listening to labels is so important. Not even, like, recognizing them, but I love how you talked about peeling them back. You know, anytime somebody says always or never, how often is it really always or never? Now, there's probably a preponderance of situations, or at least they perceive it to be so often, or not often might be better examples. But to your point, getting back and getting the examples, understanding why, not ignoring that. Often the emotional connotation that's associated with the word choice people use is so important from an interview standpoint. A phrase as simple as "I chose" versus "I was told." I moved on. It was taken from me. Like, little phrases like that should be flashing red lights to people going, wait a minute, clearly something changed, but their emotional attachment to it, their impression of control or ownership of that decision is different. We need to understand why those labels, always, never, what's the most recent example? What's the most significant example? You know, what was the example that has really set the tone for every interaction ever since? Also, very important questions to ask. So for anybody listening, recognizing that not just in your conversations, but in any of our conversations with people who work for us, with our customers, with our family, it's a great opportunity to start peeling it back. But in a way, to steal a word from you, that's an invitation. Because if it feels like we're attacking him, oh, wait a minute, why do you say he always does that? Now it's like, oh, you're accusing me of being wrong. Yeah. But if we can time it a little bit better, that's a very interesting point. People often do have behavior patterns. So I'm curious, what's really the most recent example of him handling a situation that way? Now it's, I'm listening. I believe you. I want to hear more. And gives us the opportunity to gather that data to help not only reframe their perspective, but make better decisions for the roles that we play in the conversation. I imagine from time to time, you find yourself in a mediator type role within families, or maybe even family and non-family members in the business. I have a feeling that things like finding common ground and establishing the emotional need and wrapping it around purpose are themes that will come up again. But as you find yourself playing a mediator type role with a bigger objective picture in mind, that's why they brought you in to begin with.
Yeah.
How do you work to try to help people with two different emotional needs to work towards each other, if it's not a light switch, of course, get to a point where they're willing to work together?
Yeah, the first thing I do is I try to find the egos, right? Why is this person this way and that person that way? And what do I feel like is really an ego talking? Meaning that part. And you can do one of two things. You can break down the egos, or you may have a lane that clearly supports the ego. The other thing I do in a hand-to-hand combat kind of situation where it's family is I'm also looking at the overall big picture of the math, right? To the extent people are driven by, you know, wealth, which isn't the greatest purpose, because the ego, so ego, purpose, and wealth, I'm really trying to drive towards purpose. But what can support the ego and what can support wealth? And if I look at the cumulative situation and I'm trying to transition something from one bucket to the next, maybe it's a, you know, my kids are going to become owners of the company, or maybe it's, you know, a family trust or whatever, I'm looking at what's the most efficient from an income, estate tax, and effective from valuation creation, period. Don't care who is affected, right? And so if I can create that, now I have a common, of course, as a group, family group, this is going to be the best scenario. I might lead with that, right, as a family group. Then I might go look for the egos. Dad might be fine as long as his name's on the building, right? Can I live with Dad being his name on the building? What decisions are acceptable imperfections that Dad could still make, you know, for the rest of his life, even if he doesn't own it? Like, what are the five little things that you could be okay if Dad walked around and said, that garbage needs to be picked up, or whatever it is? You know, what are those? And I'm just trying to look for the things that can be acceptable for you know, the ego, so to speak. Because Dad, you know, Dad might pick up the mail and that's all he's doing now, you know? And then is there an opportunity on the math side that supports the ego stroke that is still more effective from an overall, you know, income estate valuation, you know, multi-generational wealth creation mindset? Can I find that? And a lot of times I can. I just got to care for the ego. And sometimes the ego isn't going away. Sometimes you can break that ego down a little bit if somebody's vulnerable enough to do that. It just depends on how much time we have and where we're at in the game. You know, if we got plenty of time, you can potentially deconstruct somebody's ego to where they're at least self-aware of it. And sometimes they're not self-aware at all about it. You have to make, as an advisor, we have to make that, you have to make a call on that and how much time we have to do the work or not. And so, you know, like I said, it's the, can I put the purpose over here? Can I put the math over here? And can I put the egos over here? And where can I find common alignment in the math, in the ego, and use purpose to drive the change?
I love how you triangulated that. There's so, again, there's so many little things in that answer that I hope people are picking up on. Triangulating the ego, the wealth, and then using the purpose to bring it all together is genius. You don't need me to tell you that. That's a great way to approach it. I imagine that more often than not, if you can find a lane to use the ego, that's easier than breaking it down, because that's going to create additional layers of conflict and resistance and things to work through. Also love how you talked about where are we in the process and how much time do we have? So it's like every time I tell a story about my wife, I'm waiting for her to like me to come home from work one day and her be like, why did you say that? But it's like watching football with my wife when she sits back and she's like, well, this game's over. Well, maybe, but let's take a look at time, score, and talent. How bad is the score difference? How much time do we have? And how much talent do we have on the field and on the sidelines versus how much talent do they have on the field and how on the sidelines? And depending on how those stack up, we can take a look at what our real opportunity to come back in this game is or isn't. And it's likely the same or similar in situations where you're like, okay, what's the time frame we're under? How much time we got left on the clock? Where are we in the process? What are the obstacles we still have to work through? And talent might not be the best word, but who are the people that we have to work through them with as we elevate our situational awareness to address this? It's a tremendous way to look at it. I love the phrase acceptable imperfections. I love it. It's a great way not only to look at negotiating family business exits or succession planning, but honestly, relationships in general. Like, no one's going to be exactly how I want them to be, which is probably better for them if we're being honest. So from my perspective, what are the quote acceptable imperfections that I'm not just willing to live with, but accept and embrace as part of who they are? And that by having part of who they are still involved in this process, not only do they get to be themselves, I honestly have less stress and more appreciation of them in the situation, and objectively can work towards achieving some of these other goals as well. I just wanted to call out, asking for a specific number is so important. And I love how you called out, what are the five things? Like, to say to somebody, what are the acceptable imperfections? Are there any acceptable imperfections? Tell me about acceptable imperfections that would be tolerable. The way that lands on somebody's brain is so vague that depending on where they are emotionally, maybe they come up with one, maybe they don't. But to look at them and say, you know, in this situation, I'm curious, what are the five acceptable imperfections that would be totally, you'd be totally willing to work with your father, your mother, your brother, whoever in this situation? Now you've got them focusing on a number. It lands on their brain different. They formalize their thought process different. And even if they don't come up with five, they only come up with three, you're still winning. Because you got three, and those are three that you can build around, even though you didn't get to five. So many great things there. I love it, especially that triangulation piece of using purpose in order to unpack the ego. In scenarios where you felt like you've had no choice but to break somebody's ego down or attempt to break somebody's ego down, what would you say has been maybe an example, again, not asking for details, but maybe an example or at least an approach where you felt like you were able to use techniques to help them save enough face to come out a willing participant on the other side?
Yeah, I mean, so many. To me, so when you look at ego, you look at who's the audience for their ego that they want, right? And the ego can show up so many different meanings. It could be that they really are the best at that, and there's nobody better in the world to do whatever it is that they're the best at. It could be true, right? That could be it. But you kind of look for the audience of why that ego might keep showing up, right? Like, who's the audience for? Is it just this leader who's a controlling individual, or is it more like, you know, do they like to brag to their buddies at the country club? You know, what's the joy, or what's the, you know, where does that ego show up in a possible unharmful way? Like, where does it show up and it doesn't harm anything? I'm an expert in my industry. Of course you want that, right? I'm just monkeying around my buddies at the golf course or the country club or whatever. Those are two areas where it can show up. And can you back up to say, hey, look, I know you're the best at this, But here's the thing, like the business's value has to have processes and it has to have systems and it has to have all these other things. So the business is worth more. And right now you are the best at this. And if this stuff isn't written down and somebody doesn't know how to walk behind and follow the instructions, you don't have a business. It's just your beautiful brain, right? And so sometimes you have to kind of meet them where they're at and help them understand differently. And you may not be direct. The indirect might mean, hey, here's the valuation. And sometimes it's like, you got to figure out who's going to scorch the earth first. Is it me? Or do they get it scorched somewhere else and they make it to me? If I'm the first one scorching, you know, it's possible that I might lose a possible prospect or a client here, right? But, you know, I always think, well, no matter what, whether I scorch the earth here or I don't, will they be better because I did this work with them or not? So that's, and so the answer is sometimes if I don't see a clean lane, I might scorch the earth with, look, I did a valuation for your business. You know, on paper, it starts out at $12 million, but honestly, I wouldn't buy it because of these 10 reasons. And you kind of giving them the ego stroke on the $12 million number, and then I'm punching them in the face on the, but I don't think I'm going to have a hard time getting somebody to buy this because of these, you know, three or four reasons. But then you kind of give them ways to deal with the three or four reasons. Like, what are the things? Could be people and processes. Who's number two in charge? You know, if you've got this unique recipe in your head, could we at least document it and put it in some place? Can I use that recipe for good? You know, is there a possible, you know, possible thing that the business never owned this idea that it's your personal idea? And later on when I sell, I might be able to get capital gain because you got something that you never really gave to the business. Or I don't know, I'm making things up for now, but it's like, keep finding the gold that are conflicting. Find the conflicting, you know, goals, and then see if you can separate, divide, and create positive, you know, solutions off of that, you know, issue. But that ego, we all have it. I have one. You know, I don't know. I'm on this call because I'm always attracted to discipline listening, and I'm always attracted to, you know, FBI and CIA shows, and I love the human behavior and the human brain. Yet I'm in finance and accounting, so I'm not sure how I ended up there. But you know, to me, this ego thing is also a beautiful part of the human being. You know, it's that, you know, do I want somebody that's really competitive to play, you know, anything with darts, horseshoes, or you know, pickleball or whatever? I'm a competitive dude. I want to win. That's ego. That's all ego. Right? That's all ego. And so everybody's got one. Overused, it can be a weakness. You know, underused, it could be a weakness. But if we address it and go head on and create self-awareness, and we don't run from it, from the good things, you can turn that thing into a strength. But it also, you know, how do you build systems around, you know, if the business needs that, are the systems built around it? Or are there other people that can step into that role and other people that do it differently? That's the other thing. Yeah. We're going through a transition now where I've got this wonderful human being that's a visionary, and I got somebody else that has some vision, but they're introverted. And the introverted, you know, leader is going to be taken over. Well, the business can be different tomorrow, but it doesn't have to be that different. It just happens to be different people doing some of the same things. And so it's not, you know, there isn't this protege that's going to be you. And that's always a big thing. Like, I want them to do it my way. No, there isn't one human being that's going to do it exactly the way you did it. Never going to happen.
No, there's probably somebody somewhere in that person's life that wanted them to do it their way, the other person's way. And they said no. Did it their own way and grew this business. And so there's some of everybody's, we've all had our mentors, good and bad. We've all had our experiences with people. And hopefully for most of us, we integrate lessons from that into what we do. But a big part of it is to find our own way through. And your fascination, but also your education with the human brain and human behavior shows through. I've talked to plenty of interviewers that don't have the level of awareness that I've heard in this conversation. You don't argue with somebody's ego. You care for their ego. You try to work with it if you can. And then if you can't, you figure out what you can triangulate it around and reframe the situation. Respect and understanding that we all have that. And even the question that you ask yourself, does it make sense to scorch the earth first? I've met too many people, I'm sure you have too, where that's their whole strategy. I'm going to come in and I'm going to slap you across the face with the truth. And if you don't like it, that's a you problem. That's not a me problem. You figure out what to do about it. Well, if we're supposed to work together on something, that most certainly isn't us problem. So if they scorch the earth first and they clear a lane, great. If we don't need to scorch the earth, even better. But if I'm running out of good options, and it looks like the next decision for me is to scorch the earth, hopefully in a way that leaves them better off for it, whether we continue to work together or not, that's a very evolved way to look at creating these relationships and really leveraging the truth. Because a lot of what you do is obtaining the truth. Some of that's going to be through the numbers, through the math. The numbers don't lie. They tell their own story. It is what it is. Some of that's going to be getting people's experiences and perspectives, but it's layering it all together to create that bigger picture in order to arrive at the truth, which lines up with somebody's quest, which then helps them serve their purpose and bring this all together. And I can't thank you enough for taking an hour out of your morning this morning to walk us through all of that. I really appreciate it. I've been taking notes and learned a bunch. And I absolutely recognize and appreciate your perspective for how you do really look to connect with human beings, understand what's going on upstairs, and use that to get to a real purpose-driven result, not just trying to maximize the numbers and move on. So for the people who've listened to this and they would love to connect with you and learn more, whether it is about your business, whether it is about their family business, whether it's about bringing you in, because I know you give lots of presentations, whether it's about bringing you in to give presentations on the topic, or even work with you through your Make an Impact Foundation, what is the best way for people to connect with you and learn more about what you do?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, we've got our website, www.questnow.net. My direct email address is dgilmore with two L's, dgillmore at questnow.net. And I'm a little bit slow with email. I'm much quicker with phone calls. You probably can track my phone number down if you're very, very astute to do that. And then Rhonda on our team kind of keeps us all organized. So R. Hollingsworth at questnow.net for scheduling and creating possibilities. We'd love to speak to you. We'd love to learn more. We like to learn about people's quests, regardless of where they're at in their life, whether you're a business owner, a striving business owner, or somebody in a family situation that you realize could use a little bit of extra love and support. Our chief family officer role, our M&A experts, our planning experts, our CFOs and controllers are all meant to drive to your quest.
Fantastic. I will include all of those links and numbers and email addresses in the show. Well, I'm not going to include your phone number, but your office phone number I'll put in. But I will include all of those things in the show notes so people can find you directly. It's great to see you. It's great to be updated on all the great things that you're doing right now. I really appreciate the time. And I look forward to catching up with you again really soon.
All right. Thanks, Michael.
Hale, thank you for another great conversation. I really appreciate you taking the time to talk today. And thank you for sharing so many of the things that you and your business do and learn so that way we can apply it to our conversations in and outside of work as well. I really do appreciate it. I thought you really made a great point when you talk about accepting people's imperfections. That's so important in our personal and professional lives. I really want to call that out. And I also really like how you stop and think, okay, well, who's going to scorch the earth first? It'd be perfect if nobody did. If they do, I can work with that, but maybe I might have to. So that whole who's going to scorch the earth first approach, I thought was very, very interesting. Again, thinking back to the importance of meeting people where they are. And I really like how you talked about how important it is to not shift our standards. So many great ideas in such a short conversation. I really appreciate it, Dale. Thank you. And hopefully everybody listening got just as much out of that conversation as I did, as you think about approaching business conversations, family conversations, and who knows, maybe conversations questions that include both. So before you go, please take a moment, like the show, share the show, subscribe to the show so you know when the next one comes out. Leave us your feedback. We'd love to know what you'd like to hear more or less of so we can give it to you. And of course, while you're online, please check out our sponsors, Humantel. Go over to humantel.com. That's where you can learn everything you need to know to get your education started on understanding what people are thinking and feeling by identifying shifts in their facial expressions and nonverbal communication. While you're there, enter the code INQUASIVE25 for 25% off your best-in-class online training. Please also head over to certifiedinterviewer.com to learn everything you need to know about the International Association of Interviewers and the Certified Forensic Interviewer designation. And finally, head over to INQUASIVE.com. So you can learn more about the programs that our clients ask us to customize and facilitate for their senior leaders, sales teams, and HR teams to teach them how to obtain the everyday confessions hiding in all of our conversations. Thank you for being here week after week. We do truly appreciate it. Stay safe, take care of each other, and we'll see you next time.